UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind of it?
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, Senator.
Ares 31, me neither.
Or 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And there was anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
Or 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Something. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Emergency 295. Yeah, something just passed over us. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. So yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs we thought?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there. Same airplanes.
Any dispatch?
Okay.
Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls?
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, Bob, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Good evening and welcome to the show, everyone, wherever in the world you are listening from tonight. Before we start, I want to give a big shout out and a thank you to all the nurses, the doctors, ambulance crews, farmers, truckers, and supermarket workers keeping this planet running at this very difficult time. And if you see one, thank them from a distance. They will appreciate it. Now, in a moment, we have Jeremiah from Colorado, and he has had many experiences that he will be sharing with us tonight, including an experience while him and his family were driving through the Apache Sitgreaves National Forest. And also he will tell us about an energy device that he believes was given to him by beings of higher intelligence. I'm looking for individuals for a future episode about out-of-body experiences and near-death experiences. If you believe you have had one, email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. If you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles Podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show. To welcome Jeremiah to the show. Now, would you be kind enough to let listeners know a little bit about yourself and some of the things that you've experienced, please, Jeremiah?
Thank you, Nick. I appreciate this invitation to talk about some of my experiences with UFOs and supernatural experiences, and basically kind of go through my life. My life has kind of been a UFO experience because I've had so many of them in so many different places. There were some, it started out, I was born in Massachusetts. I've lived in England, I've lived in Maine, I've lived in Utah, I've lived in Arizona, I've lived in Hawaii. In every one of those places, I've had contacts or these beings were letting me know that they were around. I was able to see their, craft. I was able to see, and I'm sure that that's what they were because they were light, bright, bright lights. Other people were with me when I witnessed these things. Anyway, I was born in 1963, and when I was born, and I'm not trying to be egotistical here, but my mother said that when I was born, the doctor said some name and she couldn't pronounce the name. She didn't know what the name meant, but the doctor just out of nowhere uttered this name. That was just, she had told me this like later in life, and I really didn't know the significance of any of this. And then as I grew up in Massachusetts, I had an experience. There was a car bridge that went across the Merrimack River, and then there was a train bridge that went across, and they were very close to each other. And I was walking across, someone had thrown a bottle at me. It was a weird experience. The bottle exploded before it hit me. It didn't hit the bridge. It didn't hit anything like that. It just, it was coming right at me and it exploded before it hit me. So that was one of the experiences that told me that, you know, how could that happen? I never told anybody about it. In fact, maybe some of the things I'm going to say on here, I've never told anybody. But that was one of the incidents. We'll move forward, fast forward to 1983. And in 1983, I was actually a missionary in the Mormon Church in England. I had had two experiences in England, one in 1983 and one in 1999. During the solar eclipse, I was in Falmouth, England during the solar eclipse of August 11th. But the first one in 1983, I was walking down the street and all of a sudden I was stopped in my tracks. My heart was burning out of my chest and a voice came into my head, and I'm not crazy, but this voice said, go to 112. And to this day, I'm still trying to figure out what it means. Does it mean a longitude or latitude? Does it mean, what does it mean? Does it mean a street address? Does it mean, what does it mean? So anyway, that kind of kept me wondering what's going on with me. Then the other experience was, like I said, in 1999, on August 11th, I was in, actually August 10th, the night of August 10th was the night before the eclipse. I was in Falmouth. Me and my girlfriend at the time were camped out in a cow pasture the night before, and it was a clear sky. And all of a sudden, we saw these lights. It started from the horizon, this light. It shot up really fast to the top of the sky and then took a right angle down as fast as it went up without any stopping. Now, I don't know of anything that the military has that could do that. So obviously it was under intelligent control and was of a higher intelligence. So that was an experience. There was, now I'm going to kind of go back. I know I'm trying to keep this in chronological order, but it's kind of hard. So I hope you can all bear with me here. I had another experience in 1997. And this was on September 11th to boot. And this experience was, I was sitting in my bed about 10 o'clock at night. And all of a sudden, it felt like my head was being rolled back like you peel back a can of sardines. You know, you roll the can back. It was like the top of my head was rolled back. And all of a sudden, I was brought before this round crystal platform. And on this round, there was like a light coming up from underneath this crystal platform, like a bright, I can't even explain it. It was so bright and beautiful. And on this platform, there was a being. And this being, I mean, he was just light. But he had form. He had shape. I could see that he had a beard. It was a white beard. He had long white hair. And he looked directly at me. And there was a telepathic communication. And I was told quite a lot of stuff during that experience. I can't like go into all of the details, but the one thing I remember out of everything was that I was told that, and this is telepathically, that love is really what all of this is about. And the love that this being generated towards me when he looked at me, it just filled me completely up. It was just complete love, complete peace, complete serenity. And that lasted probably from 10 o'clock at night to about 4 in the morning. And at 4 in the morning, my heart started to palpitate. And at that point, this being said that they could no longer talk to me because I couldn't handle the information. In other words, my physical body could not handle the information they were giving. But at a later time or during my life, when I needed the information, it would be there for me to access. So basically they were giving me a huge download. When I needed the information, it would be there. So that was a huge experience for me. And then the next year I had another experience, and this was on November 8th of 1998. I was in Utah and I was in a church. I was in the Mormon church, and at 10 o'clock in the morning, and this was witnessed by other people, this round circle with a dot in the middle appeared between my index finger and my thumb. And it remained on my hand, and there were two women that saw this. And they're saying, what is that? Stayed there for about 2 hours. At the end of that day, I was totally blown away. I'm like, what is this thing? I couldn't rub it off. It wouldn't go away. But finally, after about 2 or 3 hours, it went away. So I was wondering, what is going on here? So that night, I had a dream. And the dream told me that what appeared on my hand, and this is going to sound crazy to a lot of people, but, and it's in the ancient writings as well, that it talked about the successor of Osiris, because it represented the Ouija eye, or the eye of Horus, and that the successor of Osiris would be magically given this mark by Thoth, which is one of the Egyptian gods. And so that totally blew me away, because I had not been thinking about anything like that, Egyptian stuff. And it seemed like after that, everywhere I would go, I would get like a witness to what this thing was. For instance, we were in California. After this experience, we were in California. And there was a replica of a stela from Mesoamerica. The Mayans had this stela. It's called Stela E. You can look at it. And on the stela, standing out, it was like 6 inches by 6 inches. On the stela was a hand with a circle with a dot in the middle. Same thing I had experienced. So now I'm wondering, what the heck does this mean? Another thing that came into my hands was the Buddhist Vada from China, or from the Asians, that they also have this symbol with the circle and the dot in the middle. And that has its representation. So I'm like, what is going on with my life here? So anyway, there was that experience. Then my girlfriend at the time, we were in Utah, and we had spent some time in a cave. It was in Provo Canyon in Utah. It was a cave. And we decided that we wanted to stay in the cave for a couple of months, and we did. And one night, we were near the entry of the cave, and all of a sudden, we could hear somebody walking around where we were. We couldn't see anybody, but there was footprints, and there was somebody walking around in front of us, but we couldn't see them. So that was another experience that we had. So we decided after that, okay, we're going to leave Utah, and we're going to go see a friend of mine in Georgia. Friend of mine in Utah, Lynn, had a car. We didn't have a car at the time. And we had 2 kids at the time. And they were young, four and five. So he volunteered to take us from Utah to Georgia. So on our way to Georgia, we drove down through Arizona on Route 40. And we got off the highway. Well, the main highway, and got off to a side road where there was forest. And later we realized this was the Sitgreaves National Forest, the same place that Travis Walton had his incident. And all of a sudden, from out of the sky, these 2 huge purple orbs came down right in front of the car. And all of us saw it. Lynn saw it. Renee saw it. I saw it. My daughter saw it and remember it. Because I've asked him, do you remember when those 2 huge orbs came down in front of the car? And then as they came down in front of the car, they then moved over into the forest, which there was no residence. There's nobody that lived there. So these 2 huge orbs went over into the forest, and we were going like up this hill, and they were on the left side of the road. And all of a sudden the whole forest lit up. I don't know. It must've been about a mile that this forest would lit up. And as we were driving, I said to my friend, I said, let's stop and go check it out. But he was pretty frazzled. He said, he slowed down, but he wouldn't stop. He wouldn't go check it out. I said, come on, let's go check it out. And he wouldn't do it. So anyway, we just kept driving. And basically out of that, I got, you know, the feeling was that we were being scanned. Basically, they were checking us out. And it was just a feeling that you had. I can't explain the feeling, but you just knew that what was going on had to do with us. And they were checking us out. And so we continued on our trip, and we ended up going to the, after that, we said, well, why don't we just go to the UFO museum in New Mexico? We found a place to stay for the night. And the next day we went to the UFO museum, and that was interesting and all that. And of course, all we were talking about is what happened to us, but we never told anybody. We just kind of kept it to ourselves. And then after that, we drove down and ended up going through San Antonio, Texas, which brings me to the next experience that we had. And the next experience we had was, we came to this traffic circle. what happened was there was a car already in the traffic circle that was really coming really fast. And we had entered the traffic circle. And that car was going to hit the side of our car. Like, it would have hit the doors. It would have hit the back seat door on the driver's side and the driver's door. He was headed right for us. If I hadn't seen this myself, I wouldn't believe it either. But and they couldn't believe it either. This car literally, it was almost like there was a force field around the car. His car bounced off of our car. It didn't hit the car and bounce off. It hit something before it even got anywhere near the car. It like bounced off, and this guy went off. It like ricocheted off this invisible force field and went off the road. That was quite an astounding experience for us. That was probably the most it was just the most wild experience I've ever had in my life. And none of us do drugs. We weren't on drugs. There was no hallucinations, nothing like that. This was the real deal stuff. And we just continued on our way. That was another one of the experiences that I had had. So the next experience that kind of put things all together, and I'm gonna have to go back again. There was an experience that I had with my mother before she passed away in 1997, which was in October. And I actually saw her spirit leave the room. It was quite an experience of peace and love. And this theme of love keeps coming back. The beings that have come in contact with me or I've seen were always ones of, it was love. There was always love. There was never any fear or like forced abduction or anything like that. It was always out of love and compassion, stuff like that. Now, kind of back to the Utah deal, my friend and I, we were staying at a friend's house, Renee and I, my girlfriend and I. And one day there was a light that appeared on top of a mountain, which there's no way, there was no cars up there. There was no houses, no reflections of anything like that. And all of a sudden this light appeared on the mountain. And my friend, Russ Scott, went in and got binoculars. And we looked up on the mountain. There were like these beings walking around this craft, whatever it was. They just appeared out of nowhere. And we just kept watching them for, you know, maybe must have been about 5 or 10 minutes. And all of a sudden they went back in and it disappeared. That was kind of another miraculous experience that we had with that situation. My girlfriend and I spent some time out at Lone Rock. I don't know if anybody knows. I'm not sure if you would know, Nick, but it's in Utah. And one night we were spending the night there. There was nobody out there. Nobody around. And all of a sudden, about, I think it might have been about 12 o'clock at night, we heard what I've learned that it's called, was the fire harmonic. And the fire harmonic is typical of some of these ships. And it's basically a pulsating sound. And it kind of goes like that. And we heard that for maybe 20 minutes. And we looked outside our tent. We didn't see anything around, but we kept hearing this fire harmonic. And so the next day we come out and there's like these clouds that are just lingering around where we're at. And all of a sudden out of one of the clouds comes this white ship, and it comes out and it sits there for a second and then it moves back into the cloud. Basically, that was the end of that one. But that was an experience something that we saw. That was a pretty wild experience. But again, there was no fear. There was no, you know, feeling of threat, anything threatening on our life. All right. Now, the next experience was during a time when we had traveled to Kauai in Hawaii. As we usually did, we did a lot of camping. And so one night, we were camping and it was a really clear night, and we came out of our tent looking at the stars, and all of a sudden we see like 5 or 6 of these lights start moving in all kinds of different directions. And they were very, you know, it was poignant. They were right there. They were solid objects of light and they were just moving in all kinds of directions. Planes don't do that I know of. They just stayed in this one area and they were just moving around above us. What was weird about this experience was, I mean, nothing happened. They didn't come down and say hello or anything, but that's what we witnessed. The next day, there was a gentleman that we were thumbing, and he picked us up, and he says, "What are you guys doing here?" He was just saying things that were really weird. And I've had a lot of that in my life too. People just coming up to you and kind of saying things that are like, "How did you know that?" Felt like he kind of knew that what we had seen the night before. Now, it was just a really weird encounter. The funny thing too was that I've of all the places that I've had these experiences, I never had an experience when I was in the military. I was in the Air Force from 1986 to 1992, and I never had any like experiences like that. It was all experiences before I was in the military and after I was in the military. You know, I had privy to some pretty heavy duty stuff, but never saw anything, any supernatural experiences or anything like that. So that was kind of interesting. Anyway, most of my other experiences are a little bit more personal, so I don't really want to get into them. You know, basically I feel, I know this is definitely a UFO site, and these are the experiences that I can share with you. And they've always been love experiences. There's never been any fear or threats on my life or someone taking me away or anything like that. It was always very loving, very assuring. But I know these beings, whoever they are, have always been around me my whole life to protect me. And, you know, I've had a lot of visions and dreams, and I've done a lot of scientific work in the past 15 years. And I feel a lot of this stuff has culminated into my being giving schematics and blueprints to a device that I've designed. And I just feel that there's a reason for everything. And the purpose I feel was that they were trying to share things with me and perhaps giving me information telepathically, or that I can help the world in some way. So, yeah, though, that's been kind of my experience in a nutshell. They certainly weren't something, it's not something you can search for. Like, I wasn't searching for this stuff, but it just happened. You know, I wasn't saying I'm going to go out and find a UFO tonight. I'm going to go out and find these purple orbs. It happened at a time for a purpose. And like I said, I've always felt protected in my life by extraordinary beings, so to speak, or supernatural beings or higher intelligent beings. I've always felt that they were near me, protecting me, and always been a love experience, never been a frightening, threatening experience. So I know there's a lot of people out there who have had UFO experiences that haven't been, you know, that way, been pretty frightening for them. And so I just wanted to share my experience my experiences with it have been very positive and very uplifting, very loving.
I'm Mike McGuire, the host of Wicked Garden Podcast, where we share firsthand witness encounters and our on-site investigations of the strange and unexplained. We've also released a new show on our feed. It's a deep dive into the baffling disappearance of a hunter chronicled in the Missing 411 series. Our show is available on all apps and podcatchers, and we hope to keep you up into the middle of the night in the very near future.
Hey, Jeremiah, do you want to tell us about the device? How did all that come about?
Well, of course, I was in the military, I told you, and I was in power production. I worked on generators, I worked in power plants. I was even in Iceland for 2 years, where we supplied power for critical cryptographics and all that stuff. And so I worked with generators, diesel generators, mostly, Cummings, 100 kilowatt Cummings, and then a Kohlers, 250 kW Kohlers, and, had to take them apart, build them. And I realized that, you know, they have magnets, you know, the stator and the windings, stuff like that. You have copper. So it led me on to, I kept like feeling like in my life that I was being nudged to, there was something better than just putting diesel in a device. And we'd go through tons of diesel. I mean, we had like a 25,000 gallon diesel tank, and these generators would suck it up, and it was just a standby power plant in Keflavik, Iceland. And so I kept thinking, there's got to be a better way. And so not too many years later, probably I would say 19, about the time I was having these experiences, and particularly when I got that thing on my hand, I seemed to have like a greater, intelligence. So I started looking at some of the stuff that people were putting out on magnetics, like magnetic engines, and they weren't being very successful. It seemed like that, yeah, that's a good idea, but it's not working. They're not getting anything to really spin. They were making efforts. And so I started doing a ton of research. And this probably happened a little later on down the line where I started getting serious, maybe around 2005, when I really started getting serious about doing research. So I just researched everything I possibly could on it, based on my knowledge in the military. And I just started researching everything I possibly could. And I got some funding, and I began to do experiments. And so one of the experiments that I did was I took some copper coupling, and I got some magnesium, then put it in the middle, and I put some salt in the middle of that. And I took a multimeter and put the one lead on the copper and one lead on the magnesium, and damn, there's power here, you know, a battery. And so I said, I'm only getting a couple of volts, and it was a small little copper coupling. It might have been an inch and a half. And basically for the magnesium, I used some welding rods, which are made out of magnesium. So it wasn't like the perfect kind of experiment. And then I put some Epsom salts in the middle, and I got a charge. And it kept recharging itself. And I'm like, this is weird. I never knew this. And so one thing led to another. I kept doing more and more experiments with magnets. I started realizing that magnets can be used, and then just kept doing different experiments. And finally, just one thing after another, I started, you know, looking at scientific research on everything you possibly could, and realized that it is possible to produce a ton of power using no fossil fuels and no moving parts. Because my initial thing was in about 2005 was to get something to rotate using magnets. But I did sort of have something going, but you could never keep it going. So I'm like, there's got to be a better way. So what I did was I said, magnets are not meant to be used on the mechanical level. They're meant to be used on the atomic level or subatomic level, because that's where the power is stored. In other words, what people call the quantum field. So how do you tap into all this? And then I started seeing all these things about scientists stating, like Hal Puthoff came out with some stuff, and then Dr. James Schwartz, and you know, Berkeley in the 70s had come out with, you know, these nitinol engines with this memory metal. And so I started kind of putting it all together, you know, doing a hell of a lot of research and more experiments. And finally, I'm like, are you kidding me? So it really does produce a ton of power. And with these various types of elements. And in fact, my device finally culminated in me having, there's like 40 different elements and in this device that I have now, but this is the final device. This is like the Rolls Royce of all of it. It uses seven different ways to accumulate energy. And all of my research is based on solid scientific fact that this is possible. This stuff is real. And I know by saying all this stuff, I'm kind of putting myself at jeopardy. And for the simple fact that there's a lot of people that don't want this. I shouldn't say a lot of people. A few of the more wealthy people in the world don't want this. This is probably their worst nightmare. Because this device you can put in your house, you can power your house, you can power your car, you can put it in your car, drive your car in the garage. And this is all in my my videos of some interviews that I had. And you don't need fossil fuels. You don't need, and even the Tesla cars, it's really, and I guess the question that you might ask now is why? Why do we need this? Well, I've answered that question. Why is because we have some serious pollution problems. You know, we have a lot of need for this technology now. It's going to help so many people. They don't have to go and, you know, fill up at the gas station. They don't have to go to a charging station like the Tesla cars. And I'm not downing Tesla at all. I'm just saying that there's a better way. And I've researched all of it. I've researched solar panels. I've researched windmills. I've researched hydro. I've researched basically everything, that even the alternatives that are out there, and they're not efficient, you know. And nuclear and trying to retrofit coal plants is not the solution, because all they're doing is pumping that carbon into the ground, which is polluting our water supplies. So that doesn't work. We could go through windmills. I mean, I don't know if many people know, but the material that they make, some of those turbines out of, is a metal that is supposed to be indestructible. So what they're doing now is a lot of these things are going into the landfills. All this resource, all these metals are going into the, in fact, there's just an article about that. Something like 10,000 of these are slated to go into the ground, you know, just waste. It's just wasted. Windmills use 100 gallons of oil every 8 months. Windmills are extremely expensive. They take up a lot of real estate. They make a lot of noise. See, there's a lot of things that people don't understand about how inefficient these things. And I think they're like 30 to 40% efficient. And then, you know, we could talk about solar. Solar uses a lot of oil to make. They only last 25 years. And they're only about, I think the best they can do now is 40% efficient. They take up a lot of real estate. It's not working. And like I said in one of my videos, you know, coal, you know, it's just very archaic. It's not even, we've got the technology now. We have the stuff to do a better job at keeping our world clean. But, you know, this is probably another reason why, is because that we need to change what we're doing. You know, I think what they say, there's at least, I don't know how many coal plants going in China every couple of years. I mean, and they're spending billions of dollars. My device, to build one of my devices, okay, costs, the first one, of course, is going to be a little bit more, but they'll end up being about $150,000. That would be like my price to build it, because it has some rare elements in it. And so it would require that, but this is the way of the future. And it's even better than the Tesla cars. Tesla cars, you still have to, all of them create waste. All of the alternatives have some kind of waste they don't know what to do with. For instance, I'm not downing Tesla. They're trying. But the batteries that they're using, once they die, they're no good. They go to the dump. My device will last hundreds of years just because of the elements that are in them are that way. There's no moving parts. One of the biggest problems is moving parts. Whenever you have moving parts, you have friction. When you have friction of that nature, things wear down, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one of the benefits of my device, is that it's not planned obsolescence, which is a word that I use a lot. Which means basically that everything that's made on the market today is planned to become defective. It's planned to wear out. It's planned that you have to buy a new one. Well, my device isn't like that. it's planned to last for generations. It can be a scary thing for these other industries that find out, oh man, are you kidding me? This means that no more windmills, no more hydro, no more, you know, solar, no more, because there's something better. But I think, you know, I think they're looking at it the wrong way, Nick. I think people need to realize that that's going to create, this device will create more jobs in other ways. Clean jobs, you know. People don't need to lose their family in a coal mine, you know, or get black lung or whatever. That, you know, it's become a lot better, but still, it's a better way. And this is what this is why I'm doing this. I'm doing this, and I realize my life is on the line. But I'm doing this because we need it, and I'm willing to risk whatever it takes to get this out there, to get people to change, to let them know that there is a better way, that there is a way that we can live cleaner lives. And just one example, I have to give you this example because it's true. If you were to pull your car into a garage, close the garage door, leave your windows open in the car, leave your car running, in about 2 hours, you'd be dead because of the fumes from the exhaust from combustion engine. Now, if you were to take that and multiply that by a billion times, which is what we're putting into our atmosphere, what does that tell you? We're poisoning ourselves. I'm not on either side of the climate change. You know, there's a big thing about climate change. Mankind is having an effect on the atmosphere, period. And just by that one little example is proof that we are affecting certain things. I don't necessarily, I know that there are, you know, people that are using that and saying, oh, well, climate change is a lie. And then you have your other side of the panel. But I think it's a combination of a lot of things, nature and man. But if we as mankind can change what we know is hurting us, what's the problem? Why aren't we putting money into these new technologies that inventors have, you know, and realize, hey, be honest, admit it. Solar is not efficient. Windmills are not efficient. Coal is definitely not efficient. I think they're 30% efficient, those big plants. Not to mention all the stuff that's being put in the air with refineries. Anyway, I'm just kind of going on and on here, but that's kind of my take on it. And I have this device, and I'm really looking for, you know, some honest people who really want to make a difference in the world. And you got to be a visionary. You know, we live in the days of being a visionary. You have to see ahead. You have to see what's going on around you and see how you can make it better. And if we can do that, you know, convince the powers that be that we're not trying to put them out of business, but there is a better way, and we can work. We should all be working together to make a better world for all of us.
That's great, Jeremiah. Have you got a website?
Yeah, it's www.mottengine.com. And my email is basically @gmail.com, mottengine@gmail.com. So
I've put a link in the description for that.
Well, I mean, I hope you understand what I'm saying, and I've repeated myself, but I really think we need this, Nick. I think we need to, and I think that's what the higher beings are trying to tell us too. You know, let's, you know, give us a little more technology that could help us out rather than continue to beat a dead horse that will never be what we want it to be. What we're doing is we're getting energy from the quantum field. In other words, there's an infinite amount of energy in a cubic inch of space that could power the United States, let's say, for a day. That much power in a cubic inch. Okay, so how do you tap into that? And this is not me speaking out of I'm full of crap, because there are scientists, well-known scientists, who have been saying this for years, that there was a quantum field, that there was an infinite sea of energy that they haven't found out how to tap into. I happen to believe the government does have some of this technology, but it's there and it's infinite. And if you know how to tap into it, you don't have to worry about going to the pump anymore. You know, we just have to figure out how to. I think in order for this stuff to get out, we all have to come together. And so everybody everybody benefits. You know what I mean? And it's what's going to level the playing field, because right now the playing field is not level. The oil industries and all these people, they have the monopolies, whether we want to believe it or not. And I believe this is a way that can level the playing field. And they're going to go kicking and screaming, but we have to do it, brother. I mean, we got to do it. I mean, if we don't, we're in trouble. You know, you can already see it. I mean, they're wearing masks in China because of the pollution. I don't know if you've ever seen what's going on there, but, and then of course the coronavirus crap, but as far as the pollution, it's horrible. And we're doing it. It's not, can't blame it on nature or a volcano or say that this is the way it is. No, we're doing a lot of this stuff to ourselves. And I'm just trying to inject something that could help. That's all.
For anyone interested or even interested in investing, give us their contact information again, please, Jeremiah.
All right. www.maat, M-A-A-T. There's two A's in there. Engine. engine.com. And if you want to get a hold of me by email, it's just mottengine@gmail.com.
That's great, Jeremiah. That's perfect.
Thank you, Nick. I appreciate it. And yeah, you're a great source for knowledge, you know, getting the knowledge out there, getting that we're not alone. And
I really appreciate you coming on today, Jeremiah. That's fantastic. Thanks for sharing all this with us today.
Yeah, thank you, Nick, so much. And have a great day, and God bless. And thank you so much.
Well, that is all for today. Thank you for stopping by. And if you've had a strange encounter, don't keep it to yourself. Come on and share it with our listeners. You can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. I will be back next week with more witness encounters. Till next time, stay safe, my friends.
You're the only man I know won't fight for gold, and that's why you're my best friend. We've been brothers all along to the end, and our paths crossed once before. It was many years ago before this war, and I gave you your name. It's what I've come so many miles to explain. You're the sun I never got to hold, and your name is Leopold. And at least before you killed me, you were told. Now I die at your side, and behold my only son as he cries. Your mother still waits for you. Please tell her that you killed me when this is through. She dreamed this most every night, and you can go and tell her that she was right. We both sat on her horse late at night. She always said it'd be you. Who would run me through and take my life? On a day I met my son and lost my wife. But that is why I came. Say hello, shake your hand, and tell you your name. Your name is Leopold. Leopold. Now, my son, take this land. Tell your mother I succeeded in my plan. I met my only son, and I gave to him my land and all my guns. You are Leopold. Leopold. You're my son, and now I die.